So in this text, we are studying the four paths to spiritual growth, spiritual progress, the path of action, karma, the path of love, the path of yoga, doing the exercises, breathing, and the path of knowledge. So last week we had studied that we may perform the actions, but the results depend on a higher power, depend on the Lord. And also the ability to act comes from the Lord himself. But we think that we are doing the actions. I am the doer. And so when I think I am the doer, then I get ego. And then I get arrogance. I get pride. Or if it doesn't succeed, I get depressed. So these joys and sorrows bind us and give us more problems. So this particular subject is explained more in the second verse as to what is the problem, why actions can create a problem, karmas can create a problem. And then next week, we shall study the solution. So let us see how actions bind us, how they create problems. And that is covered beautifully in the second verse, which is on page number 6. Kriti mahau dadhau patan karanam. Kriti mahau dadhau patan karanam. Phalam shashvatam gati nirodhakam. Phalam shashvatam gati nirodhakam. So kriti mahau dadhau. Kriti means actions. Actions are compared to a mahadadhi, a huge ocean. So actions are compared in this to a huge ocean. And it says actions are the cause of fall, patana karanam. Actions result in our fall. So you say, why? I mean, we have to do actions. You cannot survive without action. So you mean every time I act, I am falling downward? Yes, that's what they say. We'll understand that a little more. Why are actions causing a fall? Because phalam ashashvatam. Shashvatam means permanent. Ashashvatam means not permanent, temporary. So the results of actions are temporary and gati nirodhakam, and they are an obstacle to my spiritual progress. So let us address each word of this very important verse. First, he says that actions are like an ocean. So, all actions are like an ocean. So, let us see what happens when I'm in the ocean. Say, I'm in a rowboat. Say, my ship crashed and everybody drowned and I survived and I'm in a rowboat alone. And I'm in the middle of the ocean. Now, I don't know which way is north, south, east, west. Maybe from the sun I can figure out, but I don't know how far the land is, you know, whether it's 100 miles to 50 miles, 200 miles. And I have limited amount, maybe a little bag of food or something. And I'm rowing and I am lost because I don't know which way to go. I don't know how long, you know, when will somebody come to save me. So I feel I'm lost. I feel I'm helpless. I feel I'm hopeless. Similarly, actions also are compared to an ocean because actions are continuous. There is no end. Just as ocean has no end, actions have no end. As long as I am alive, I have to work. And so I feel compelled to work. I just as a man is feeling compelled to row his boat, I feel compelled to act. And I don't know when the actions will end. How will it end? And there seems to be no end. There seems to be no solution. There seems to be no, especially because I just keep on working. And we find that in this day and age, people have become workaholics. They work from morning to night. You know, they work from morning, they work till night. Even when they go home, they're working on their computer, they're working on their iPhone, they're working on their laptop. Even when people are on vacation, they're still checking their emails and their boss can still get hold of them, you know, through email, through Twitter, through Facebook, through cell phone. So there is nothing like vacation. There is nothing like time off. I'm just constantly under the pressure of work. And it's is considered the great, you know, the person who works 12 hours a day is better than a person who works 8 hours a day. Person who works 16 hours a day is the best, you know, deserves to be promoted. And so, especially when we find in professions like law and accounting and all, especially the beginners, they really have to work very hard. They work from morning to night. They even work Saturdays. Even when they're home, they work from home. So work becomes the only goal, the only purpose. And people feel that I cannot get out of this. I'm just tired of working. I'm just tired. That's why they say work is like an ocean. Even when people rise and they become owners of the company or they become CEOs, they have so much habituated themselves to working that they just cannot stop. And they say, they feel like, oh, without me, the company will stop. Without me, the work will not go on. And so this work becomes an obsession. Work takes over you. You don't work. Work does is not an a means to a, something else. Work becomes the goal itself. Work should be a means that through work I'll achieve that. But after a while, work itself becomes a goal that I have to work, work, work. So work becomes an action, becomes an ocean of actions. Now, how does the work bind us and how does it create sorrow? How does it create bondage and sorrow? Because anything that you do in the world is temporary. Is there anything that you have done that is permanent? No. Whether you build a building, whether you build a company, whether you get a job, whether you get married, whether you... Everything is temporary. You build a house, nothing is permanent. You buy a brand new car in 3, 4 years, 5 years, you know, it is falling apart. House was new one time, now it's old, now it's giving me problems, now the roof is leaking, now the furnace. Job, in the beginning, it gives me great joy, then after a while, why do I have to go to work? People don't even look forward to Mondays. Why? Because, oh, I have to face that boss. I have to face my coworkers. So anything that we achieve, marriage, in the beginning is so beautiful. After a few years, you know, I have to see this person every morning. So nothing in this world is permanent. And whatever is temporary will eventually create sorrow. Right? In the beginning, it gave me joy, but ultimately it results in sorrow. Even what I acquire, after I get it, then I have to take care of it. Then I have to take care of it. Then I have fear I might lose it. Even if I earn money, now I have to take care of the money and then I have to invest it wisely and then the stocks go up. And then I'm very happy and then some, you know, crooked guy comes and he takes the money and puts it in some bad investment and then everything collapses. The guy runs away with half my money and then I'm depressed. Oh, you know, I had a million. Now I only have half a million. You at least have half a million. No, he's not thinking about that. He's thinking about what he had. So anything that I possess eventually leads to sorrow because I have a problem of retaining it. Then I have a fear of losing it. That I have it today, I may lose it tomorrow. So whatever we have creates sorrow. Then the second thing is, how does it create bondage? It binds us. Actions bind us. Because when I work, what do I work for? Does anybody here work for sorrow? That by doing this job, I will get sorrow? No, nobody does that, right? You work so that this job will give me joy. Whatever work I may do, I may be gardening, I may be starting a company, I may be getting a job, I may be building a house, I may be going on a trip, going on a vacation, going on a picnic. So every activity we do it for joy. That by doing this activity, I'll get joy. Nobody does an activity for sorrow. But the problem is that the joy is temporary, as we talked about. Anything you do, the joy is temporary. So you get joy for a while and then the joy wears off. Then you say, I need to repeat that action. You know, that pizza gave me joy last time, one slice, so tomorrow I should have two slices. That alcohol or that cigarette gave me joy. One glass of wine gave me joy. Maybe two glasses will give me two times the joy, three times. So I keep repeating the action, hoping that the action will give me joy. So I do an action, then I get some joy, then the joy wears off, then I repeat the action. So I get more joy, and then I get joy, then I repeat the action. So I'm bound, action, enjoyment, action, enjoyment, action, enjoyment. And in that process, I get addicted. I get hooked that this action is giving me joy. And so that leads to, that leads to vasanas. Because the more I get addicted, the more I get joy from something, the more I want to do it. And the more I want to do it, it becomes a habit. It becomes a habit, it becomes an addiction, and it creates more vasanas, it creates more bondage. And the vasanas ultimately lead to more actions, more vasanas. The vasanas get strengthened. It leads to more desires, leads to a sense of incompleteness, that without this particular object, I'm incomplete. Without, and even the thing may be harmful, but after a time, if you ask an addict, you know, who's addicted to alcohol or drugs, why do you do it? Don't you know it's harmful? It's damaging your liver. He says, yes, doctor, I know it's damaging, but every evening when I go home, I have to have a drink, because without that, life is incomplete. The person may know, or the drug addict, he knows that the addiction is so bad, he's making him steal, he's even selling his wife's jewels, he's, you know, even stealing his children's pocket money to get drugs. He knows, but the vasana, the addiction, the habit is so strong that it binds him. He feels bound. He cannot do without it. Not only that, but as we know, the vasana not only binds you in this lifetime, but you carry it with you. Even when you die and you are born again, if you believe in rebirth, then the same desires, the same bondages are go with you. They don't leave you. You cannot get rid of the vasanas by enjoying it. There are other methods which we'll talk about next week. But the more you indulge in it, the more the habit becomes stronger, the more it carries with you. And not only in this lifetime, but the problems stay with you even the next lifetime. That's why we find some children from childhood. Some are very good in sports, some are good in music, some are good in, you know, studies, and some are good for nothing. You know, all they want to do is because that's the habits they are born with. You know, they might be the same four children in the same, from the same parents, but we find they are so different because each one comes with their own vasanas, comes with their own desires. And some kids just don't want to work. They don't. You try their best and they do nothing. So why? Because that is their desire, that is their vasanas. So that's how we get bound. And the problem is that we are looking for permanent joy. Is anybody working for temporary joy? If I say, you know, I'll give you something, 1 year it will give you joy. But after 1 year, you'll have extreme sorrow. So I don't want that. I don't want something that after a year will give me sorrow. I want something that will give me permanent joy. Otherwise, don't give it to me. So we are looking for infinite. We are looking for permanent joy. We are looking for the highest. And actions, finite actions, no matter how many times you perform, how much you do, cannot give you permanent joy. The finite can never give you infinite. You keep on doing finite actions again and again and again, looking for joy, cannot give you permanent joy. It cannot give you infinite joy, because infinite joy can only be got by other means, which will be covered in the book. So the purpose of life is permanent joy, infinite joy. Actions cannot give it to us. Not only that, but they become an obstacle in our spiritual growth. As we know, the vasanas or the tendencies lead to selfish actions. Because I have so many desires, so many vasanas. So to exhaust all those, to satisfy all those, I do selfish actions. I try to, not only I run after things that I should have, but also things I should not have. Things that don't belong to me, things that belong to others. So I try to steal, cheat, hurt others. And the more vasanas I have, the more selfish desires, the further I go away from the truth. The further I go away from the Lord within. As we know, if you're, you know, a person is a criminal or a crook or a cheat, he's away from the truth. He's away from God. While a person who has minimum selfish desires is full of love, compassion, kindness, that person is very close to God. He's very close to the truth. So the goal of spirituality is to reduce our selfishness, reduce our desires. But in the process of acquiring and possessing, we get more and more, we get more and more bound, and we get further away from the Lord.
And actions cannot be dropped. You cannot say, from tomorrow I'm going to do nothing. You can't. Even you have to, if nothing else, you know, after you get up, you say, tomorrow I'm going to do nothing, but you at least have to go fix your breakfast, right? Otherwise you're hungry. You get up and at least I have to go make my toast or make my egg or pancakes. So I cannot stop acting. Then I have to go to work, even if I say I have enough money, but I still have to take a shower. You know, I mean, I cannot stop acting. So actions cannot be stopped. So we say, I cannot stop acting. I have to continue to work. Work gives me bondage. Work gives me sorrow. Work is an obstacle in my progress. It does not give me infinite. It sounds very depressing, right? What am I to do? So the solution we'll give you next week. but today I'll give you a little hint, a small hint, and then it will be expanded more next week. There is a very beautiful verse in the Upanishad. It says, na karmana na prajaya dhane na tyage naike amritatva manashuhu. We chant that whenever any Swamiji's come, when we welcome them with the coconut. Some of you must have seen that. When Swamiji's come, we welcome them with the coconut and we chant this. So what it says is that to succeed in the world, you need three things. Say if I want to, say I stand for elections, right? And I want to become a councilman or a congressman or a supervisor or something. I want to succeed in the world. So there are three things I can do. Either my own effort, others' help, or with money. So like I want to win for city council. So what do? I pound the pavement. I visit every home with my own effort. I visit every person. I get to know their name. I get to know the children's name. Hi, Bob. How are you? How's your son, Bill? So I get to know everybody. I put a lot of effort. And finally, they say, oh, he's such a nice person. He knows everyone. So with my own effort, I win the election. But somebody said, I don't have time. Or the area I have to cover is huge, all the way from Bakersfield to Ridgecrest. Say I'm a supervisor. I cannot pound the pavement all the way to Ridgecrest. So what I do, I ask others to help. Okay, I know the mayor of Ridgecrest. So I tell him, you know, can you support me and can you talk to your, city people? And so I get others' help. And so that's how I win the election, either with my own effort or I have other people who can help me, my friends, my neighbors, my family members. Or the third is with money. I spend a lot of money. I buy ads in the TV, in the newspaper, everywhere on the hoardings, everywhere. My name is everywhere. And so people recognize, oh, this person must be good, whether I'm good or not. But if I spend enough money, I can make people believe it. So either I can succeed, anything you do in the world, whether it's building a factory, whether anything I do, these are the three ways only to be successful. Either my own effort, others' help, or money. And what do I get in the world? I either get a lot of money, say I work very hard, I get money, or I get a lot of power, or I get heaven. Because even they say that even to attain heaven, there are certain activities you can do. One is, of course, if you do good deeds. But in our scriptures, they have described certain rituals. If you perform these rituals or if you pay the priest to perform, then these rituals also give you a lot of merit. And so you reach heaven. And people think reaching heaven is the highest, right? Is the highest goal. But in our literature, they say heaven is a temporary place where you go to enjoy. Like if I've done very good deeds, I go to heaven, I enjoy for a few years, maybe 500 years or 100 years. And then when my good deeds are exhausted, I come back. Or if I have done bad deeds, I go to hell, I suffer and I come back. So neither heaven nor hell are permanent. It is like I have money, so I take, I have a credit limit of $5,000. So I take $5,000, go to Hawaii, and I enjoy myself 1 week, 2 weeks. And then what happens? My $5,000 ends. I have to come back. I cannot keep living in Hawaii. When my money ends, I have to come back to work, accumulate money, and then next year maybe again I can go to the Bahamas, everything. So heaven we consider as Bahamas, as Hawaii, as Las Vegas, as a place you go to have fun. And when your time exhausts, come back. Time talking about heaven reminds me of this little story. They say that people who do terrorist actions, if they die and they have these suicide bombers, they say they'll have 71 virgins in heaven. And you must have all heard that. or I don't know, 69 or 71 or some number of virgins you get up there. So anyway, so there was this cartoon. There was these suicide bombers, one of somebody missing an arm, somebody missing a leg, and they were walking, and there was a sign that said heaven. And then there's another board. He said, stop, stop, stop doing these actions. He said, why? He said, we are running out of virgins. So heaven also is a temporary place to enjoy. So in the world, I get by my own effort, others' help, or by money. But can I get spiritual success by my own effort? Just by working hard, working hard, work. Can I have spiritual success? No. I'll have worldly success, but my own success I cannot get with effort. No matter how much effort you put, you say, okay, by others' help, you know, some people think guru, you know, if you go to serve a guru, you hold on to his feet and guru will carry you. And a lot of faiths even believe that. Some gurus even promise, not in our Chinmaya mission, but there are other faiths, they'll say, you know, you come and serve me and I guarantee you, you will get liberation, you will get heaven. But no guru can do that. No individual. There are in Hinduism, they believe that if the wife does a lot of good actions, the husband gets half the merit. And that's not true. It's like if I am hungry and my wife eats, will I? No. Yeah, it's true. If I earn, my wife gets half the money. That is true. But the other does not apply, that if my wife does half the spiritual actions, I will get half the benefit. So you cannot get spirituality by your own effort. You cannot get by others' help. And you certainly cannot buy with money. You cannot say, I'm going to spend so much money that God will be happy with me. Or you cannot bribe God. You cannot say, oh God, you know, I gave $1 million to your church. Now you should give me permanent joy. No. You cannot get it with your own effort. You cannot get it with others' help. You cannot get it with money. Then how do we get it? Swamiji in the text, in the last line, just briefly mentions, by renunciation or detachment. By giving up the sense of doership and by dedicating actions to God and then working for Him. And so detachment is the path, and we'll talk more about that next week. So renunciation or detachment, and by going inward into the cave of the heart. In this verse also they say that in the cave of the heart, what they mean is deep inside us, there is the Lord. And so to go to find spirituality, you don't need to go thousands of miles. You don't need to do this. We're not saying that good actions should not be done. We'll talk about that next week. But ultimately, if you want to find the truth, you have to go deep within the cave of your own heart. And they say it is beyond heaven. Parena nakam nihitam guhayam. That's what it is said. That it is even beyond heaven. Even heaven is a temporary. When you go deep within, and that's what we practice in our meditation, when you quieten your mind and go deep within, you find the Lord's presence. And once you have seen that, once you have experienced that, once you have known that, then that is permanent joy. That is infinite bliss. And that is within you, then you do not need to look for outside. You don't need to look for others' help. You don't need, because I am that spirit. I am that consciousness. So look for it within. And that's what we practice in meditation. And then you still will do actions. It's not that we will stop working in the world, but how to work and what work to do, we'll be talking in more detail next week. So they say withdraw from the world when you sit for your meditation, quieten the mind and turn it inwards. And in that silence of your deep meditation, you will experience a peculiar joy, a peculiar peace, a peculiar silence, which I'm sure all of you have done. Like she was saying last week, as you are progressing in spirituality, automatically the attachment for the world drops off. You don't need to force yourself. You don't need to anymore go to the shopping malls. You no longer enjoy parties. You no longer enjoy buying new things. Why? Because I have enough. I am content. So that silence and that contentment can only come when you have discovered something else. Just like a child who is playing with a precious, you know, you have a glass, you know, curio that is very, that you brought from Holland, you know, and now the child has got hold of it. You're afraid that he's going to throw it and break it. Now, if you try to forcibly grab from him, he'll cry. So what do? You give him a chocolate. Here, baby, take this chocolate. The moment he sees the chocolate, he leaves that. And you can take it from him because now he has got the chocolate. So similarly, the mind, which is playing with this world of objects, emotions, and thoughts, you cannot forcibly say, from tomorrow, you will not go to the shopping mall. From tomorrow, you will not go to parties. From tomorrow, no. You just give it something higher. Give the mind something higher, something better. Then this automatically drops. So that is called renunciation or detachment. It's not a punishment. It's not forcibly taking away. It's not that I don't love people. A person who is spiritually evolved loves people even more because he sees the Lord in everyone. But the love is not selective. See, our love is very selective. I love my child. I don't love the neighbor's child. I love my friend, my wife, my family members. But a spiritually evolved person loves everybody. So that kind of detachment, that kind of renunciation comes when you find the Lord in the cave of your heart. So this in brief is the problem of actions, where too many actions working constantly leads to bondage, leads to sorrow, can never give us permanent joy, and in fact becomes an obstacle in my spiritual progress because I start doing things that are immoral and actions cannot be stopped. So this is what we have studied today. Any questions, any comments?
Try to reduce the vasanas, and that's also effort.
No, it is effort, but what I meant was that through effort alone you cannot do it. That, you know, like some people say, I'm going to sit for years and meditate and all that. Effort comes in giving up, and that does not require effort. It requires changing the direction. That's what I'm saying. The effort does not mean that you don't do anything. But just working alone, through work alone, you cannot acquire. What I meant was working alone, like doing a lot of surveys, doing a lot of work, and you know, all the time building, and which is good. But that again becomes a bondage. Ultimately, yes, effort is required to drop this and to progress. But what I meant was effort in the sense of work. Work cannot get you spiritual growth. That's what I meant. But yeah, we need to put in effort to grow spiritually and to drop. But that just requires a shift of attention. You don't have to stop working. You just shift your attention. That is what it's called.
You're
dropping the physical and shifting your focus. Right. It is hard. No question. Because at the body level, we are attached to things or people. You know, we are attached to people or to things or to our possessions. At the mind level, our emotions. We want joy. We want to run away from sorrow. People who give us joy, we run towards them. People who give us sorrow, we run away. And at the intellectual level, we are attached to our ideas, our philosophy, our concept. Like I'm a Republican or a Democrat or I'm a liberal, conservative, or I'm an environmentalist, or, you know, so all these ideas we get so attached to, and it becomes very difficult. So you are attached to fanaticism, you know, my religion, my spirituality, my book. So you can be attached to the body level or at the mind level or the intellect level. So all three attachments are difficult to give up. And obviously the goal of spirituality is to reduce these attachments. You're right, it is difficult, but it can be done. All these great saints and sages did it. You know, all these great saints did it before us. If they can do it, why can't we do it? So if you just keep saying it is difficult, you're right, it is difficult, but one has to start. They say a journey of 1,000 miles start with one step. If I want to walk 1,000 miles, if I say, oh, it's too difficult, I'll never. But if I take a first step, second step, third step, so the steps are given in the books. All we have to do is decide that's what I want. But it can be done. You know, it be just by reading the books and by looking at the examples of great masters, great teachers, we can do it. But I think your point is right. It's not that easy. That's why we say it takes multiple lifetimes. But even if you don't believe in that, in this lifetime itself, it does take a lot of effort. Do you have any suggestions, any ideas? Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's why they call it an ocean. Because we drown. We are drowning in these all these attachments and actions. You know, ocean, just as eventually you get drowned, so actions are the same thing. We call it an ocean. So as we continue in this text, we will find that there are ways to get out of that, out of these bondages and attachments. So we will be covering that. Today, the first two classes were just to give us the problem. What is the problem? And then the solution will come in the next few weeks.
I thought it was worse for women, for mothers, than fathers. I think, you know, the time so much.
No, but they get attached to their golf clubs. You tell them golf game, oh no, and not, children may be sick or whatever. Yeah, my sports, if I'm watching on TV, I'm not going to leave it. Or my golf game, it's sick. I have to be Saturday, Sunday. And you tell them come to Gita class on Sunday, you say, no, Sunday I cannot come. I have to play golf. So, yeah, so everybody's attached. They may be attached to different things.
Not after, but
they get attached to their job, they get attached to their work, to, you know. But you're right, women generally have a more of a tendency to get attached,
yeah,
that's true.
More, and yeah. Even.
Right. But then men have their own problems, they have an ego. See, men have a big ego and that itself becomes a problem. See, women, at least they have, because they their life is more sacrifice, sharing and giving, so they have less of an ego. And so they get a lot of spiritual benefit just by giving, just by helping, like taking care of their children, their house, their husband. Well, men get such a big ego that it separates them from God too, because the I and my is very difficult. So we all have that problem. So I'm sorry, what were you saying?
Well, there's a lot of men here, there's a lot of women here, and we all both want to grow spiritually, and we all want to be attached.
That's why we are here, you're saying. Those right, so that's good. So that's why we are learning. See, that's the advantage of coming here.
I don't think we will be able to get to be as the one that founded the Chinmaya Mission. Right.
Yeah, well, you know, the thing is that to realize, it's just a gradual process. So, you know, each one of us has certain amount of vasanas, tendencies, attachment. So as you slowly become aware, actually they say if you decide, you can even do it in 2-3 years. If you really decide, this is what I want, but it doesn't happen. But at least if you know that this is my goal and you start working towards it, instead of getting discouraged and saying, oh, I'm not going to have it in this lifetime, you say, at least I have started and sometime or the other I will reach. Otherwise, if you say, I'll never reach, then it's not. My goal is that, okay, if I don't reach in this lifetime, maybe in next lifetime. But the idea should be that I want it here and now. I want to know the truth here and now. Because how long does it tell you to know that you are that? We already know that. We just have to start bringing it into our practice. I am that spirit. I am not this body. We already know that. But how long does it take to apply? It depends on how many vasanas, how many tendencies I have. So just the fact that I know this and I become aware and start putting my effort is itself good. Instead of getting discouraged and say, I don't think I can reach it. I'm such a bad person. No, we are all the spirit. We are all that Holy Spirit. That's why they say the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. We all are that Holy Spirit. It's just a matter of recognizing it. So, yeah. So I don't see. And there's no room for discouragement. In fact, the fact that you have this knowledge is good. At least now I am better off than what I was last year or 5 years ago or 10 years ago when I had no idea. So at least each year I'm doing better, and that's all. You know, I am also feel the same way. You know, I'm, you know, for compared to 5 or 10 years ago, I have come a little some way further. So it's good. You know, each one of us. When I first started on this path, I had no knowledge at all. You know, I had knew nothing, but slowly, you know, it comes. So it's good. There's nothing wrong with that. Yeah. So I just keep on doing it. Just not without getting discouraged. This is my goal. I'm going to reach it. And if I reach it, fine. If not, at least I progressed.
Yeah.